Want to thank you all for the participation this morning. Some great questions and comments, and we're looking forward to more of that with this next panel discussion. Our topic for this next session is about managing expectations and communicating findings from Sentinel. And I'm very pleased today that we have a panel with so many different and expert perspectives on this topic. This topic of understanding what Sentinel can and can't do, communicating that effectively, both in general terms and when it comes to specific applications of Sentinel, as you started to hear about, you heard about some of those initial applications from Rich Platt and potential applications from Bob Temple this morning. As this starts to happen, this is obviously a very timely set of issues. Sentinel is a potentially valuable source of information on deepening understanding of a drug safety profile, but maximizing that potential hinges on carefully developing and interpreting the results in light of both the strengths and limitations of the data and methods used. And as you saw, as you heard earlier today, there are a lot of very important and challenging issues in that regard. Then appropriately communicating results from Sentinel and managing expectations about this system requires an understanding of these strengths and limitations, since they inform the level of uncertainty, the appropriate actions based on Sentinel findings. As our understanding of electronic health records and our understanding of the other data sources that can potentially contribute to the Sentinel network continue to evolve, obviously how all of these issues are going to be handled or the appropriate way to handle all these issues will also evolve. So I think the evaluation work, the data development, the development of methods, all those kinds of things we talked about this morning are challenging. Well, that brings us to communicating about the results from all of this effort. The additional evidence coming from Sentinel, I think, pretty clearly be of considerable public interest. This large, relatively comprehensive and systematic initiative can provide some valuable insights beyond what has been available to date, not just with FDA's existing tools, but as you know, there are increasing number of publications based on the kinds of individual databases and systems that are part of Sentinel, but that in many cases aren't part of such an extensive support network, validation network, ability to do look behinds on the data, and so forth. So even going beyond Sentinel with so much being published and so many investigations now using large observational databases like these, there are some implications for helping the public deal with all this information, all these findings. And we got a great set of panelists to help us discuss all these topics. I'm going to introduce them all very briefly now and then turn to them for some opening comments. I think the consensus of this panel is that you all can just, you're all comfortable just generally staying seated and we'll go through your different perspectives and then have some time again for comments and questions from all of you who are here. And start going down the line with Rhonda Meadows, who's the Executive Vice President and Chief Medical Officer of UnitedHealthcare. Next to her is John Santa, the Director of the Consumer Reports Health Rating Center. Next to John is Merle Weinberg, President of the National Health Council. Then Elliot Levy, Senior Vice President of Global Pharmacovigilance and Epidemiology at Bristol-Myers Squibb. And then Ed Staffa, who's a writer and editor for the Office of Communications in the Center for Drug Evaluation and Research at the FDA. So a lot of important perspectives that have been involved in one way or another in Sentinel types of activities to date, as well as very extensively in efforts to help develop better evidence and help the public and other particular stakeholders understand the evidence that's being developed related to safety. Rhonda, I'd like to turn to you to start us off. Thanks.
Thank you, Dr. McClellan, and thank you for inviting United Health Group to participate in today's forum. As the provider of health benefits and health services for over 80 million people nationwide, and more specifically to 38 million people through our Medicaid, Medicare, and commercial health plans, we have a vested interest, a very strong interest, in preserving the health of our members, as well as being an active partner in ensuring patient safety. Beginning in October 2011, I'm proud to say that United Health Group, through its company, Optum Insight, became a data partner in the Mini Sentinel program, providing commercial data and analytics, and we hope to do more. We are an organization of 78,000 employees, and the reason that I tell you this is that typically when we talk about setting expectations and communicating, sometimes we forget that even though we have 80 million people in our care, some of those people are actually ourselves. So when we talk about communicating expectations externally, we're also talking about communicating with ourselves, because them are us, as my son would say. What I want to also share with you is I've always been impressed with the technology advancements and the medical treatment advancements, as I'm sure we all are. But one of the things that I've also been impressed with as I learn more about the Sentinel program is the advances made in this program through Sentinel and through Mini Sentinel and the other efforts of FDA in terms of patient safety science and communications with both providers, plans, and members going forward. This becomes particularly important when we start thinking about that if we don't keep up with the science of actually observing and being vigilant in looking for unintended consequences, as well as being smart enough to anticipate when poor outcomes may come, then we do not do our own patients and consumers a good service if we do not use our brains to actually address those issues in advance. United Health Group has a great capacity to assist, support, and to be a very effective partner with the FDA and the Sentinel program in particular. Again, we are amazed at the progress made since 2008 when this program went live. I can remember very well some of the startup challenges and adventures with PRISM during H1N1. And I have to tell you that what I've seen actually develop in that interim time has been tremendous. I will share with you that, folks, we were extremely lucky with H1N1. We're extremely lucky with new vaccine development being done rapidly. And to have a system like this in place for any future endeavors, as well as to have the system like this in place to do a rapid assessment and do rapid response, is a tremendous asset to our nation. When we talk about setting expectations and communications, one of the things I did was to look at the extensive amount of communications that have already been developed by both the FDA and as well as the information posted on the Brookings Institute website. So I don't know about you, but I've enjoyed the webinars. I also did also note the October 2010 meeting notes that describe extensively the effort put into actually assessing how patient communication or consumer medical information should be improved upon, enhanced, and expanded to address the pressing need for the public to have a great understanding of what is actually out there to provide them with some safeguards. What I wanted to add is about five or six things on top of that. Number one, when we talk about members and providers, we are talking about a group of individuals who do not have on their daily plate every single day the wherewithal, the time, or the interest to check a website to find out information about drug safety, drug issues, or alerts. So that means that it becomes our job as both public and private partners to ensure that they actually receive that information in a timely manner, in a manner that they can use and understand, and that they find credible. And the reason that I repeat something that may seem sound very basic, so I want to add one little caveat to that, and that is when I had the discussions with some of the Brookings staff about how we should approach this as a health plan, as a payer, I would say that the one big lesson learned for me for H1N1 is that there should be a single source of information, a single source of truth that is used to actually provide the information to the providers and to the public. There is nothing more confusing than getting 16 different letters, emails, faxes, alerts from a variety of different payers, both public and private sector, about an emerging issue that could be an emergency. So if we were able to actually coordinate the communication, both the timing of it as well as the message itself, that would be a tremendous help. Second is if we are going to have physicians be a part of this network, and we absolutely have to have them, we have to make it as easy as possible for them to actually receive, again, a common message, but to also have a system that allows them to report adverse incidents or even questionable adverse incidents as easily as possible as part of their normal course of action. And while I've said physicians, it's just a little bit of bias on my part. I really mean anybody who is a provider of health care. So that may be physicians, it may be the nurse practitioner, it may be the hospital, and that includes the pharmacist as well. And one area that we tend to often overlook is long-term care and nursing home facilities. That needs to be added into the mix. The next that I wanted to share with you is that health plans, while we are a great source of data and analytics, there are other things that we do well, too. And that means that when we look at the map, I think on one of the PowerPoint presentations about the Sentinel program, it talked about there being central signal generators, signal refinement, as well as signal evaluation. And I would propose that health plans, deep down in the bowels, there are actually real scientists, real clinicians, and real people with a vested interest in making sure that we do right by our patients, consumers, and members. These people can actually help us actually not only send the data after the query has been generated, but may also be the source of a query. They may be the person who actually creates and recognizes a trend that has not earlier been noticed. They also have the technology, the analytics, and the smart, so to speak, to be a part of the evaluation as well. So I would suggest that we not be limited to one piece, which is a data source, which I think is a great piece, but I think there are other things that we can do that contribute to the entire effort. Next is that we coordinate our communications across payer types. So we are doing great in terms of public-private partnership with Mini Sentinel and then the federal programs, but I would submit to you that the other way to do that is actually look at the Medicaid program, the Medicare program, TRICARE itself, add to that mix the emerging areas of ACOs, patient-centered medical homes, and the exchanges, and make sure that there are already built into these new programs, as well as the old programs, a mechanism by which information can be generated both ways, either to, again, initiate the query, but also to be a great source of actual data that could be used to further refine and then evaluate a query. That we actually have two different systems in place, one private and one public sector, I understand, but I think that the goal is actually to have a common language, a common model for data sharing, and common standards going forward. So while it's great to hear about the Mini Sentinel program, I also want to hear more about the federal program, the partnership that goes across. That would be a tremendous, tremendous help. Particularly as we see these new public models coming out, we want to make sure that our tried and true standards of Medicaid and Medicare are also included in the mix now. I'm going to try to wrap this up quickly because I see the 1 minute and a half sign flashing, and that is to say a couple of things very quickly in two sentences or less. Okay, I'm going to lie. It's going to be more than that. When we, as a plan, as a provider, as a consumer, are addressing new programs, new initiatives, new technology, that we could be cognizant of the fact that there are multiple things being rolled out at the same time. If there is a national quality agenda with HHS, it would be great if the quality programs, one, would include patient safety regarding medications in it, and then two, that there be some commonality to the measures, metrics, and performance areas that are being assessed. The same holds true for the exchanges. The same holds true for health information exchanges. And the same holds true when we're talking about assessments of the effectiveness of these programs. One thing that is not so politically correct and at times seems insensitive to say but is a necessity is that we have to also embed in any program that we develop those mechanisms to assess not only the cost of the program and how it will be sustained, but honestly, as a true measure of performance, how much cost avoidance is achieved by actually not only saving lives, but reducing illness and disease burden. Thank you very much.
Great. Thanks very much, Rhonda. John?
Thank you for including us. Consumers who are independent of the pharmaceutical industry are a vital part of any solution. We appreciate the effort that Brookings and the FDA have made to include us In fact, probably the most important word that I heard this morning was in Mark's introduction when he said, everyone, that everyone will be involved in Sentinel. That's not something that we hear very often. Safety and errors in our healthcare system is a challenging problem. We would describe it as at least a tangible threat. We might describe it as a disturbing reality. Many of us are concerned that safety, not cost, is what will cause consumers to lose confidence in the industry. Indeed, it appears that has already happened in some industry sectors like pharma and government and hospitals. We still have the chance, though, to keep a high tide from becoming a tsunami. But if we are to do so, it will take a series of steps that are currently a challenge. This week's anecdote, somewhat off this topic but connected, the Office of Inspector General reports a study of analysis of 785 randomly selected Medicare beneficiaries nationwide in which they identified 293 hospital medical errors that led to patient harm. They found that the hospital staff reported only 14% of these, only 41. Only two of the 18 most serious events were reported. Those were events which led to permanent disability or death. The most disturbing thing for me was that out of these 293 errors, only five of them resulted in any change in the way hospitals were doing their business. Can any of you imagine going to whoever you're responsible to and saying that almost 300 errors occurred in your area and you've only figured out ways to correct five of them? It's disturbing. So, consumers must be involved from the start and at the top to assure that credible and competent approaches are taken to prioritize safety. Brookings and the FDA have done that with Sentinel. We have a unique opportunity to create an environment where industry and consumers can engage around data on safety rather than anecdote and advertisements. But to do so, there must be a level playing field where all sides have access to the information, understand the methodology, are able to enable their experts to weigh in. Key here will be how the playing field is set up, what the rules of engagement are, and especially that there be transparency. Word that we heard a lot of this morning. That needs to be at all levels. That means all involved should disclose financial, intellectual, and other conflicts. Input to the process should be balanced. Key decisions should not be made by those with financial conflicts, no matter what sector they come from, including the FDA. Data free of any risk of privacy concerns should be made public for analysts in any industry segment to analyze. Some of you may have read David Finkelstein's piece in the LA Times this last week about his small claims suit involving his Tamiflu purchase. Consumers will not cooperate with a system that allows data to be used for marketing and then hidden. And that brings me to communication. I think it's very reasonable to create guidelines around the communication of conclusions. Consumers want to know what the limits are of any information and analysis. But they want to know that from scientists and writers who are free of industry influence. If there's uncertainty, they want to know that. Most important, the communication rules need to work that way for everyone. Consumers don't have marketing budgets to fund the communication of safety information, and consumers don't have the resources to clarify the meanings of signals. So firm commitments need to be made that marketers will not misuse Sentinel information, that marketers will not communicate information about signals inappropriately, and especially that when signals are present, their validity is pursued with priority. We're very enthusiastic about the progress being made here. We look forward to this being an example of how the rest of the industry can approach and solve safety problems. Thanks.
Thanks, John. And next is Merle.
Thank you. I'm going to take just about 30 seconds to make sure everyone knows what the National Health Council is. We're an umbrella nonprofit. We have over 100 national health-related organizations and businesses in membership. They all have to be national. The core constituency are the patient advocacy organizations. We have about 50, so it would be like cancer, heart, Alzheimer's, but spina bifida, Sjogren's, a wide range of individual chronic conditions. And then we also have, it's important to know, health insurers like United Healthcare. We have companies like Bristol Myers. We have Pharma, AdvaMed, AHIP, the umbrella for health insurers. So the point is that we have, as dues-paying respected members in the same organization, all of the stakeholders. So our positions and our discussions are always informed and made more rich by the discussions and the perspectives of all these different stakeholders. Ultimately, we work on systemic issues that all the patient groups have in common. We do not do disease-specific work. Everything we do is ultimately controlled by and done for patients, and our mission is to provide a united voice, and we really unite all of the stakeholders that I discussed. I want to make one other quick point up front, and that our discussions are always informed and made more rich by the discussions and the perspectives of all these different stakeholders. Ultimately, we work on systemic issues that all the patient groups have in common. We do not do disease-specific work. Everything we do is ultimately controlled by and done for patients, and our mission is to provide a united voice, and we really unite all of the stakeholders that I discussed. I want to make one other quick point up front, and that is, and John knows this, we think about consumers and patients as slightly different in the sense of as one approaches them. A consumer often is thought of as a generally healthy person that moves in and out of the healthcare system as needed. When we think of a patient, we think of a person with one or more chronic conditions who, once diagnosed, will always be involved with the healthcare system for the rest of their lives, for their health, potentially for their life. So some of you have heard me before on the topic of communicating, et cetera, and I support a lot of what's already been said. One of the things that we keep coming away with is the need to have some clarity about communicate with whom, by whom, and having some priority of those audiences. So we can't lump consumers and patients and public and all of those together, because how we communicate with those different audiences and what methods we use, even what we communicate, is going to be different. And so I would just encourage all of us to think about, are we really talking about individual patients? Are we talking about patient populations and subpopulations of those groups? Are we talking about the public at large, and then have some prioritization of those different audiences? We also feel like that if you're talking about the means of communicating and we talk about needing reputable sources, we've done some research to know that these patient advocacy groups like American Cancer Society, American Heart Association, et cetera, are perceived to be, if not the top, one of the top credible, trustworthy resources, because the people they represent believe that those groups are only there for them and that they get really scientific, unbiased information that is good for their welfare. So, again, even thinking about who's the third party intermediary between FDA and these different audiences, it's important. FDA clearly cannot communicate directly with all the individual patients or even with the other audiences that I described. One of the things that the patient advocacy groups, I think, have questions about is, and it was referred to earlier by Rhonda, how all the different efforts fit together, and just making sure we really have a learning healthcare system. And when the organizations at the national level are aware of the initiative that's going on related to patient medication information, we're aware of evidence-based initiatives in multiple departments within HHS, and we've been very involved in PDUFA, which Mark referred to, and some others, where FDA has pretty much been positive about developing a benefit-risk framework. And so for us to have as much clarity as possible about how those things all fit together is really important for us to then be able to represent FDA when we go out and try to help communicate and disseminate the findings. It's also a question I think that isn't completely clear is it communicating about Sentinel itself, the system, what's important and for whom, or is it really just a lot of people don't need to know about Sentinel. They really need to know about the findings. So I think even deciding what is it we want to communicate, is it about Sentinel as a separate kind of system entity, or do the findings fit into these other communication strategies about risk and about benefit? And people, patients truly do, from research we've done, want to know all of the ramifications of the findings. They don't expect products that they take to be 100% safe. I think most people, we've determined from our focus group, nationwide telephone focus groups, they have a pretty good understanding. When something comes onto the market, it's not perfect for everyone, and they want to know about those different risks, but they also want to know about, as much as possible, what would be the potential benefits. So I think breaking down the audiences, talking about some prioritization of those given the findings that are starting to come out from Sentinel, being clear about when is it relevant to which of those audiences to have those communications, when it will have meaning for them. There needs to be a problem defined that you're addressing. There needs to be saliency, immediacy for the person or entity that's receiving the information, and it needs to be actionable. And so I just would offer with those brief thoughts that we have done quite a bit of work in this area. We really appreciate also being involved in this effort with Brookings and with FDA, and in any way possible, we'll continue to be a strong partner.
Great. Thanks very much, Merle. And next, I'd like to turn to Elliot.
Thank you. My name is Elliot Levy. I work for Bristol-Myers Squibb, which is a biopharmaceutical company devoted to developing medicines to treat patients with serious unmet medical needs. I speak here this morning as a drug developer and drug safety professional. I'd like to make a few comments on managing expectations and communication. I think there are probably three critical points which need to be repeated in managing expectations for Sentinel. The first is probably obvious to everyone in this room. It's that the safety profile of a drug is fully described only over its life cycle. At the time of initial authorization for marketing, we only know enough to support the use of the drug outside of the controlled clinical trial setting. That's well understood in this room, but I think that public awareness of that fact is still limited and needs to increase if expectations for Sentinel are to be set at the proper level. I think it's also important for the public to understand that Sentinel acts primarily as an accelerator of the process of understanding the safety profile of medicines. It's not in and of itself directly going to reduce the likelihood that a drug with a safety problem will come to the market. It's deployed in the post-marketing setting. And third, it's important, I think, for people to understand about Sentinel that in most cases the results that flow from it will be directional rather than definitive. There will be cases where the findings from Sentinel are sufficiently definitive to form the basis for a regulatory action. Those would be cases in which a very large effect is seen, cases where alternative hypotheses can be ruled out, where there's strong supportive evidence from biologic plausibility or from other external sources, and where the data are consistent across a range of databases. But I think the expectation should be that in most cases the data from Sentinel are not definitive but directional and point towards further analyses. I think we all recognize creates a problem in communicating the results from Sentinel. We, I think, in industry, we work within an established framework for communicating the risks about our products. That's based on the product label. The core feature of the label is the description of adverse events that have been established to have a reasonable probability of being related to the drug. And we have a well-established channels and modes for communication about those risks to patients, including not only the label, but other modalities such as direct healthcare provider communications and other communication strategies that may be deployed as part of a RMP or REMS. There we're dealing with adverse events that have reached the threshold to be considered reasonably likely to be related to the product and to be appropriate as the basis for making decisions about the choice of treatment for patients or their management on therapy. For the most part, the data from Sentinel, as I say, will be directional rather than definitive. If it is definitive, then we know what to do. We know how to address new risks through product labeling or through restrictions on product use. But in the majority of cases where the data are not definitive, I would argue that we don't have today a framework for communicating those risks that is as well developed as the framework that exists for communicating established probabilities of adverse drug reactions. My suggestion would be that we work to develop a framework that has categories and terminologies that become as familiar to physicians and patients as the established categories in product labeling today, and it might include summaries of where the issue arose, that is, what the signal is that led to evaluation of the issue, and what the strengths and limitations of the signal were, a presentation of the data that's sufficient to allow people to understand, again, the strength of the finding and the limitations associated with it, as well as a description of what other data is available. I believe that it will be essential for the FDA to work with a variety of stakeholders, communities, to establish effective means for communicating these data that are meaningful for groups with different perspectives and interests. I believe that there's an important role for the product innovators to play in evaluating data from Sentinel. Sentinel gives the FDA capabilities for independently evaluating safety signals, which are enormously valuable, and I think everyone in the industry is excited about the potentialities for Sentinel. We continue to believe, however, that the innovators possess a unique knowledge about the product that's acquired through 10 to 15 years of development and then marketing experience, and that the FDA benefits from that knowledge base in evaluating safety data such as that which comes from Sentinel. And so I think it would be unfortunate if an appropriate desire to avoid undue industry influence in the evaluation of safety concerns results in the FDA being restricted in their access to industry knowledge in evaluating those data. I think that's where I'll conclude there.
Thanks, Elliot. Go ahead, Diane.
Thank you, Mark. So I'm the last guy on the last panel of the day, and I have the ability to repeat most of what's been already said, but I'll try to do it from the perspective of a communications person, which actually leads me to my first point, which is the progress we've been hearing about today, I think, is marked kind of by just having a communications person from FDA on a panel today. Typically, it's the scientists and the clinicians and so forth. And it, in my mind, represents a great deal of the progress that's been made, where we are finally getting to a point where we have results and we need to communicate them. I think that's a milestone, and I think it's a sign of progress. Speaking of progress, what we've already said before, and I think it's worth repeating, the progress has been persistent over time. In July of 2010, we met our 25 million lives goal of access to healthcare data. This year, July of 2012, we have 100 million lives goal, and that's already been met. So, and I believe that's been met maybe 2-3 months ago. So we're essentially close to a year ahead of schedule on that goal. So the progress has been quite steady. We have this working model of active surveillance with a source of over 100 million lives, 17 data partners. One of the communications challenges we're almost evolving to is that we call this mini Sentinel. And, you know, we've said before, it's not so mini anymore. It's a rather robust system with a lot of research capabilities. And, again, it's a sign of progress. With all of that said, we also have a long way to go. Mini Sentinel is still a pilot. And I think it's fair to say that we're still learning everything that MiniSentinel can do and how to harness the potential of all that data and all that information that we're able to access. And that leads us into the concept that's been discussed before, managing expectations. We're going to see a lot, even now we see people hearing all of these positive messages about Sentinel and probably getting a lot of misunderstanding of exactly what Sentinel can and cannot do, both currently and ultimately. One of the things I think that, you know, I sometimes get this image of the old, you know, kid's toy, a magic eight ball, where you ask it a question, you know, is this drug safe or is it not safe? And it might say, you know, it is decidedly so. That can easily be a vision that people have of Sentinel, where in reality, we don't ask it a question. We ask it this thing called a query. And Melissa and I worked like a whole morning on defining a query, and I think it's important because what a query is for the public is a request for data. And that request for data is a lot of data and a lot of information. When it comes back, it's not a simple answer, as has been discussed here before. I think Dr. Temple's presentation highlighted the complexities of the data that FDA scientists have to evaluate when they're trying to determine a safety issue. And once we receive these data from Sentinel, they've got to be analyzed by clinicians and epidemiologists and statisticians and probably IT people too before anything can come of it. And I know it's been said too, it's important, these data are not just used on their own, but they're combined with the other safety tools that exists. So managing an expectation of, you know, Sentinel is not an answer machine, so to speak, I think is a communications challenge that we currently have and that we'll continue to have. The other, as we've said many times in this meeting already, is that Sentinel is one tool in the toolbox. Again, when they hear all of this positive information about Sentinel, they're going to think, well, this is the newest tool that may replace our existing tools, may replace our AIRS data collection system, may replace the way we currently do things now. And it's going to be an ongoing communications challenge for us to drive home the point that Sentinel is another tool, be it an important tool, probably better to say a new tool than a just one more tool, to drive home the point that it is something special, but it's not, you know, it's not likely, as has been said before, that Sentinel in and of itself, information from Sentinel, is going to determine risk or safety of a drug, but it will contribute to our body of knowledge. So those, I think, are the key points with managing expectations from a communications point of view. The last thing I want to talk about, which I don't think has really been touched on yet, is from my perspective and from our perspective in our communications group, the findings that we will be communicating from Sentinel and the challenges we have to communicate those findings are in many ways not that much different than the challenges we have communicating findings from any other research tool, which speaks to Merle's question of, are we communicating about Sentinel or are we communicating about our findings? When we communicate about our findings for a safety issue, it's one of the most challenging things we do because the common denominator for most of them is communicating uncertainty. And therein lies, you know, a great deal of problem. Whether we're trying to say that, you know, one study said X, but one study said Y, and they conflict, whether we're trying to say this drug may cause a risk or this may have some adverse effect rather than it does or it doesn't. You know, the uncertainty is that we're communicating gray rather than black and white, and it's very often, from our perspective, misperceived by the public, even now. Sentinel findings will be no different. We have what I consider to be a very expert staff that does our drug safety communications, very precise in the way they are trained to communicate. I would say not all the time, but with some regularity, the communications that we put out that say, we're communicating this new finding from this study that sort of conflicts with this study. You know, drug X, we didn't find that drug X caused the heart issues. It's not uncommon to see headlines in the media and so forth the next day that say, FDA says drug X is safe. You know, very black and white, very simple oversimplifications of the messages. And I don't see where that's going to be a whole lot different with the findings that we are going to have to communicate with Sentinel. So the commonality of the risk is of the communications from what we already do, I think, is worth noting. So just to wrap up, it's encouraging to see all the progress that we've made. We're very prepared and very aware of the expectations that we have to manage. And we have a lot of experience already communicating uncertainty, and we're going to need to use that moving forward, communicating uncertainty about Sentinel.
Great. Thanks very much, Ed. I'd like to thank all the panelists for the opening comments. So this is, again, a time when we'd like to make sure there's input from all of you who are here. We'd encourage you all, if you have comments or questions, to go up to the microphone, and we'll handle these the same way that we handled them in our earlier sessions. Maybe one issue to get things going a little bit with the discussion is, as Ed just said at the end, is that, look, dealing with uncertainty and lack of finality in safety results is not a new thing for the FDA. FDA has a number of tools already used for safety surveillance. Unfortunately, none of them is perfect and immediate and gives definitive for all time answers. A number of you, though, suggested that sort of some combination of things. One is that maybe there's some new or further steps that could be taken, as Merle said, about these communication strategies with some uncertainty generally. Second, a number of you all suggested guidelines, as John said, related to the communication of Sentinel findings, and Elliot even went through what some elements of those guidelines might be, and kind of taking into account that the results are likely to be more directional than definitive, and some components of what might be included in the communications, a summary about the signal, summary about how it fits in with other known data and their limitations, and maybe something on next steps to address it. Again, these are not completely new things for the FDA. We'd just like to hear a little bit more from you about where FDA might go from here, about given these communication challenges and the new opportunities and challenges that Sentinel presents in this context. Merle?
Yeah, just a couple of quick thoughts. One of the things that we found in our research is that people, one, they really do want to have the information about the safety, obviously. They also, there are certain ways that certain populations can understand those risks, and so percentages may not work at all because someone may not, and so it may be you have a 1 in 10 chance. They understand 1 person out of 10, and it's just, again, to really talk about, we need to check the words and the messages with the intended audience for the communication, because it just isn't going to be the same, and that takes some time and resources and money, and so it's looking for those partners that can really help augment what FDA might do. I also want to support the idea of a framework or a protocol. I was thinking about it in line with if we think we may have a false alarm and we might scare people off, There could be a protocol or a framework established should such a thing occur, and that would be what would, you know, if it's about a particular condition, go and identify the patient groups that work with that condition, et cetera, but have the actual format framework laid out ahead of time. And if it's done for those instances, Mark, I think it could be done then in general and have a framework for communicating the findings that just kind of automatically goes into effect at the time of a finding or at the time of, as I said, a potential false alarm.
Other thoughts on that?
I would agree. I would also add to that that one of the things to do is to use some of the channels that we use for other communications to members, albeit either directly to the member or actually member, patient, consumer, but also through the provider, who is actually their trusted resource. So they may see something that comes in from an insurer. They may see something that it could even be co-branded with FDA coming in from an insurer, and they may hesitate. But if we actually work with our provider networks, with our physicians, with our hospitals and pharmacists, we have a much stronger, who have a much closer bond to the actual patient, we would all do better. So we would have to have different levels, different literacy levels, different messages, but they all have to come back to that same common message, whether it's a mixed message or a directional. It doesn't matter as long as it's consistent across the board.
Other comments? John?
I think
John and then Elliot. Sorry.
Well, I think there's going to be some challenges here. You know, one of the things that we see and hear is actually problems with certainty. While consumers know that there's risks to being in the hospital or to taking drugs, from our surveys, most of them report that they're assuming when their doctor gives them a drug, when the hospital gives them a drug, when the hospital does something, that the evidence is that it is safe. And if anything, the certainty is that they're going to do okay. And there's very little communication during those interactions about any uncertainty. I remember one of my first sessions with our advocate sitting next to a woman whose previously perfectly healthy 16-year-old son committed suicide 2 weeks after he'd been put on an SSRI. And she had no recollection of anyone ever mentioning any safety problems around suicide. And after the event, her physician refused to talk to him at all. You know, there's elements of certainty out there in the system that we believe are a problem. Also, again, as I hear this, it's going to be easier for us to explain to consumers, okay, here is a safety system that is transparent, that everyone is involved in, that could give you a sense of rates, that is much better information than these other tools. Yes, there are other tools, but those other tools aren't transparent. We don't have the data for the 15 years of work that the drug industry has done on a drug. That's not available to us. So inevitably, I think this is going to create an interesting mix. And it's good, I think, to be starting the conversation about this now.
Elliot?
So I think what I heard from my colleagues, and I would echo, is that we need to have consistent messages, but a variety of channels and modalities for communicating them. I think it would be extremely helpful to have an approach to communication of these exploratory safety findings that provide sufficient detail for scientifically sophisticated interlocutors to examine, assess, and form their own opinions, but provides also sufficient insight into their implications to support those communications out to the many different groups who need to use that information to make decisions about their treatment. We need to, I think, to do both, to provide the scientific background for the scientifically sophisticated consumer, but also to provide enough insight into its implications to support consistent communications out to the variety of uh, stakeholder groups.
So, and Ed, before I get to you, it does, just hearing these other four comments, it sounds like a good deal of consensus about the both the challenges here, the fact that these are not new challenges, but the potential value of having a process to get to framework or some guidelines for communication, which all these different stakeholders would have an opportunity to make some contributions. I want to come back since you emphasize that these are not new issues. Any thoughts about where Sentinel can go from here to handle these communications issues effectively?
Well, one thought that comes to mind, and folks can easily find it on our website. There's some discussion here of consistency of information, standardization of information. We have a standardized document, if you will, that's put to quite a lot of use over the course of a year called a drug safety communication. That's uppercase, and sometimes it's confused with just a general term, drug safety communication, lowercase. But this is a formal document with the FDA that we put out with regularity. I think we did over 60 drug safety communications this past year alone, and they are consistent. They are standardized. They have information for both healthcare practitioner and patient. They have drug use data. They have comments on not only the potential risk of the product, but the benefit of the product as well. And this document has actually evolved over quite a bit of time because of a lot of communication challenges. Was mentioned a bit earlier about multiple channels. This document has been designed to communicate to both the healthcare practitioner audience and the patient audience in the same document because we found that separating the channels of communication led to confusion in and of itself. So I guess along the lines of we're already doing some things that that we might want to stick to when it comes to communicating findings, whether they're from mini sentinel or other uncertainties. It might be a start to look at those drug safety communications and see how they fit those descriptions.
Great. Thanks, Ed. Rhonda?
Yeah, I wanted to make clear that we weren't actually talking about the FDA materials themselves being inconsistent. We're talking, or at least I'm talking about, when payers are actually trying to help disseminate the information, that we stick with what the FDA has actually created. So we're not talking about inconsistencies within your own organization. But if we're going to be a true help, then we should be able to actually make sure that we come back to the common message and not create something completely new based on our own independent analysis of it. That would be my concern, particularly, let's say, if you're a regular family physician and you work for 12 different insurance companies, you really do not need 12 or 13 different versions of an assessment. You need one common message that will help you then take care of the patient. And when the patient is actually being seen, they need to, again, get one common version. So what I'm trying to emphasize is to come back to a source of truth. And you should be, the FDA is the source of truth. Where there is some ability for us to actually contribute to providing any resources to actually have different media channels or communicate pieces along. I realize that you're the federal government. You've got lots of money. You can do lots of things. But I also know that we feel the responsibility as well to make sure that the members get things that they can actually use because it's different literacy levels as well. I know you address it. I'm just saying that we're trying to offer our help as well. Help get the message out and to get it out quickly when it needs to get out fast. There's nothing like a crisis in the nation for us to all pull together. I'm saying before we have the next crisis, if perhaps we could actually pull it together ahead of time. It's just saying.
That's a good plan.
Thanks.
Thanks. So I want to shift gears in this discussion a little bit. We've been talking about communications, particularly communications involving sentinel results or new information that may be directional, not definitive, and that may come with its own uncertainties. I want to shift gears a little bit to talk about going back to the setting expectations issue and what the public does or doesn't know about Sentinel at this point. By the way, I'm looking around the room, it looks like people are still very much paying attention and interested. I'm certainly enjoying this discussion. But if any of you do have specific questions or comments, please do go up to the microphones. In this regard, as I think Ron has said at the outset, is that, look, a lot of people in this room are people who are following the websites at the FDA or at Brookings or Mini Sentinel and keeping up with the events that are going on. But at some point, if this is becoming another potentially important tool in the FDA toolkit, it's something that probably the broader public needs to at least be aware of before that crisis. And I don't know that Sentinel's made its way, I'm not sure AIRS rolls off the tongue of the American public either, but I think people are, many people are generally aware that there's a reporting mechanism and that FDA periodically puts out updates and drug safety communications with the capital letters based on that kind of tool as well as others. Sentinel's not really up there yet. So any thoughts specifically about what might be communicated to the public now or soon and how to do that in the not-too-distant future as Sentinel starts getting off the ground, or is it still too soon for that, or should we just wait till there's something actually to communicate?
I'll start. We are already doing a massive amount, we meaning insurers as well as some providers, are doing a massive amount of communication about efforts toward quality improvement. And I think that actually putting information in about a patient safety surveillance system, addressing patient safety as a quality improvement going forward would be a great place to start. We're already doing the communications, whether it's little talks in town halls or meeting at senior centers or sending out mailings or newsletters or whatever. So it seems like that would be a vehicle, not only for the Medicare population, Medicaid, the commercial. All right now, we quality has the attention that it has deserved. So this would be a great opportunity to roll it in and announce it that way, so that it's not kind of like standing off by itself.
John?
Well, a couple of comments. I know I'm on the science media side of Consumer Reports. I interact a lot with our advocacy folks, and certainly safety issues, as I mentioned, are a high priority for us. I must admit that as I interact with them and other folks in the advocacy community, they're still perceiving Sentinel as not doing much. And if I think Sentinel is ready to sit down with that community, I was pretty impressed with Dr. Platt's presentation, and I think some more assertive effort to gather that community and have a conversation. Of course, it's a risky conversation because I think you have one chance in some respects to make an impression there. But if and when you're ready, I think that community should be considered. Second comment would be for our publication, of course, we have a very specific audience that's older and more highly educated and probably more sophisticated. They do love data. They love ratings. They love comparisons. And, again, as I saw some of those start to come up, when those are ready to be published, our publication will be very interested in publishing them and integrating them in various ways into our work. To some degree, I'm certain when we do that, want to publish something about, well, here are all the tools in the toolkit, and I can see the ratings table now. Here's what we know about Sentinel. Here's what we know about AIRS. Here's what we know about information from drug companies. Maybe we'll even put our little blobs. And, if it's, yeah. So there's two options.
Merle?
Yeah, I am. I guess I'm feeling like, because I've been fairly involved over the past few years, that we're certainly Sentinel's closer to being ready to communicate. I like the idea of picking out groups, whether it's the media or consumer groups, the health insurers, or in our case, it might be patient advocacy organizations, to have a separate kind of more in-depth conversation with them. We have a meeting once a year with the CEOs and volunteer leaders. They have to come together. I mean, those are opportunities. And that connects to another thing I wanted to say, and that is where those groups are focused right now, it's important to know. So right now, we're at one of the places they're focused is PCORI, the Patient-Centered Outcomes Research Institute. Joel Selby is speaking at the conference I just described. So I think that spending a little bit more time potentially with certain segments of these different audiences might help really develop that framework we were talking about earlier and might help decide how do we communicate with this particular area and what expertise do they have to take our messages from Sentinel and FDA further. I think the relationship between this evidence and other, as I said, and PCORI, those are critically important, and that is something it's important to communicate about now.
I also think that Sentinel is a noteworthy accomplishment. It's not simply as a tool for understanding the safety of products more quickly, but also as a spur to the development of better methods for understanding drug safety, which will pay large dividends in the future. I believe that at a time when, as has been remarked, people in the country are losing faith in institutions such as government and pharmaceutical industry, that it would be nice to point to success. I think there are others on the panel who are probably better qualified than I am to talk about how that should be done. But I think it would provide the opportunity not simply to raise the profile of the FDA and the coalition that it's assembled to develop Sentinel, but also to set appropriate expectations around the value of the tool in accelerating our understanding of the safety of marketed medical products.
Thanks, Elliot. Go ahead. Yeah, you get extra credit for that. Thank you.
Not just about the findings, but about Sentinel and about what FDA is doing to track risk and to track safety, because there's not a lot of information out there. I mean, I commend the FDA for a lot of great work they're doing, and it's very difficult to communicate risk in a way that doesn't panic people but gives them all the information they need. But there's nothing out there about Sentinel. You really have to look hard, and you have to be sort of a data geek or an information geek like me to be able to dig through what's happening. And I think perhaps something like, you know, working through the National Health Council or working through the patient advocacy groups to give updates on Sentinel, to describe to people who are truly interested what the situation is, to give the kind of information that's been provided today, so that when something does come out, that people have a basis of understanding of how these risks were identified, how the signals were detected, and what to do with the information. Because there's not a lot out there for the average consumer, or for even for the non-average consumer to find, unless you're willing to pour through stuff on, some pretty government geeky stuff on the FDA website, or reports to Congress on the Sentinel Initiative, whatever the case may be. So I feel very strongly there needs to be a basis of understanding, not just about Sentinel, but about errors, about what the system has been, how the system's evolving, because it's really important. And patients may not be looking for it on a day-to-day basis, but they will look for it when it's relevant to them. And then you obviously need to communicate about the risks that are detected in a way that makes sense, you know, again, not just for data geeks, but for people who can do it and, you know, who confront these, who may not spend their life looking at health issues and health data, et cetera. So Thank you.
You all do have vehicles, as some of you mentioned. Rana talked about the communications efforts that the plans are undertaking around quality improvement and safety improvement. Merle, the conferences and so forth that NHC does, consumer reports, obviously. And you all do have vehicles for this kind of communication. What would help? Are we not quite ready, as some of you sort of suggested? Is there something that FDA or that the Sentinel collaboration could produce that would be helpful as a basis for this kind of communication? Oh, go ahead.
Well, I agree with you, and I think there's an audience that's much bigger than the audience that's aware of Sentinel now that would like to know about what's going on. But I've also learned that, you know, until you can give them something tangible, you can't really get to that bigger audience. I mean, I was involved in a drug project in Oregon, the Drug Effectiveness Review Project, and nobody knew about us until Vioxx. And you could just feel the explosion and interest because we had published a report about non-steroidals 2 years before the Vioxx, and all of a sudden it got discovered. And so that example is compelling. I mean, as I sit here, I wanted to mention one thing. I mean, one area, sorry, my impression is there just aren't hardly any tools in the device tool chest. Sentinel would be a breakthrough when it comes to devices. I mean, we and others are interested in devices, and you can't figure out hardly anything about devices. So a Sentinel initiative that said something about devices would likely get a lot of intention. And, you know, I think there's a lot of folks, including the FDA, who are trying to, create other tools about devices, but Sentinel seems like it would have incredible potential.
I guess I would just add, I think we're very open to ideas and to working with folks on, you know, how to communicate Sentinel, maybe how to partner with people to get the message out. From our point of view, communicating about something like Sentinel in an age of information overload is very challenging. You know, if you look at news, I mean, things happen in order to get in the news. Sentinel is huge, but it's very slow moving. It's been going on for years. It's evolving. What do you say and at what point? We've taken opportunities like with the 25 million mark. We put out a summary of Sentinel. We announced that we met our goal because that's an event. We'll probably do something around the 100 million goal that we met. But in general, it is challenging to keep a slow-moving, complex issue like Sentinel front and center in the mind of the public. And when you do, take an opportunity to communicate something as complex as Sentinel, it's hard to do it in bullets and sound bites, which the public wants to. So it's not really an answer, but it does help sort of maybe frame some of the challenges we have with communicating Sentinel.
I want to go back to what the previous speaker from the audience said, and I don't think we'd start with the public. I mean, I think what I'm kind of hearing and certainly would agree with is we start with some of the stakeholder groups, duh, here we are, and really talk about laying that basis. So you have a more sophisticated group that has outreach in multiple ways to groups, to stakeholders that FDA cares a lot about, not going to the public, but starting to lay the groundwork for what is Sentinel, having people have the discussion, ask the questions, hopefully have really good input maybe to how to improve Sentinel from these different stakeholder points of view, and then have that move out over time so you wouldn't have to have something go out with all kinds of caveats to the public. And it wouldn't be about 100 million. It would be about, the list, as you said, of successes that we have now. 17 different entities with huge databases where we have information on people that's protected, but look at what we can do over time. So I think there's a huge amount to brag about and have people know about as those first steps. And I continue to sort of feel a need to have some kind of plan for laying out the stakeholders, laying out the priorities, and then trying to work with some of those to say, how do we, within this stakeholder group, what's the best way to begin communicating about Sentinel, the findings, and then the limitations and benefits of the findings?
Elliot?
I think John made a good point that these sorts of efforts usually become publicly known when there's an event. But I would argue that the time to raise the public's awareness of this is before there's an event. And as Merle suggested, not starting with the general public, but working out through expanding circles of people with interest and ability to appreciate it. There actually has been an event, not for Sentinel, but there is a case now where large electronic data sets have been used to support a major regulatory decision, the withdrawal of a product from the market in France. I think the danger in waiting until something like that occurs is that it creates expectations around the capabilities of the system that may be difficult to fulfill, and then if subsequently the system doesn't, if the system fails, that it highlights a signal that's not confirmed, then it's thoroughly discredited. So I think it's important before there's an event in which a decision has to be made that we begin to talk about what the system is, what it's capable of, and what its limitations are.
A very good point, and reaching 100 million may be a good announcement, but I guess one of the talking points at that event is going to be, so when did you reach that? sounds like it's happened already. But still, big news and progress, maybe something to hang hats on. I want to pick up on some of your comments about the importance of stakeholder engagement more generally, and that, as Merle was suggesting, maybe being a way of starting to broaden public understanding further, maybe not going for the general big announcement quite yet, but some next steps on engagement of the broader stakeholder community. And Merle suggested, well, it probably is worth thinking about as an overall strategy, but can I put you all on the spot right now and ask about, for a specific next step in this regard, what would be good to build on what has happened so far with stakeholder engagement? Not to pick on John and Elliot, but John, you talked about the importance of engagement of all groups in a transparent way on an ongoing basis. Elliot, you mentioned the potential value that product developers can have in helping to provide insights into both the Sentinel methods and development and some of the findings related to specific Sentinel inquiries. So we ask you all, what would be a good next step, given where Sentinel is now, for enhancing the stakeholder engagement?
Well, two ideas. I think there's a large cadre of pretty sophisticated journalists who are interested in drugs and drug safety. I think it'd be very interesting to make an effort to get them together and talk about Sentinel. I think they end up reaching millions of people in a variety of ways. They understand evidence. They want to cover things more and better that are evidence-based. And there's a couple of organizations that those journalists belong to and respond to. The other thing, if Sentinel would like to have a public meeting in Yonkers at Consumer Reports, I'm sure Jim Guest would be more than happy to host you. And we'll try and get all the consumers we can find. Let you know, you can gauge how they react to this. It's halfway between Boston and D.C., so a little bit easier.
Yeah, Yonkers sounds good. Any other comments, thoughts?
You know, at the right point, you might try, and I'm very serious about this, the National Press Foundation. It's a nonprofit. It's educational. They have the means to get the right people in the room working in partnership with FDA around, they do it on very focused, fairly sophisticated issues. And so there might be some type of partnership you could work out with them over time to do a series of things to help educate not only those people who are really into the science, but even at the right time, those journalists from around the country who do report on these things, whether or not they're experts in the area or not.
Rhonda?
I don't know if you already do this, but do you already host for organized medicine, physician associations, medical schools, pharmacy schools, nursing schools, information about drug safety, medical device testing, Sentinel program?
A little overview curriculum or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Good idea.
So it's built in?
Good idea. Well, I really appreciate all the suggestions, and I hope you all will join me in thanking this panel for an excellent discussion of some very challenging and timely topics. All right, and now it's time to thank all of you. I want to start by thanking the many people who have been involved in the Sentinel Initiative. There has been a lot of progress, as you've heard about today and hopefully are seeing in these annual meetings now that we're on year four. I'm very much already looking forward to year five. But it very much remains a work in progress with, as you've heard, many challenging issues ahead. And I think meetings like this one, opportunities to exchange ideas and perspectives, are very important in making further progress. As John and I both emphasize, this is a partnership effort. It is only going to work with the participation of everyone, and only going to get the participation of everyone if we pay due attention to these good ideas for giving people confidence that the Sentinel Initiative really is adding to the safety evidence that's available for improving public health and promoting patient safety. So lots more to do, but a strong foundation thanks to all of your efforts to build on there. I want to give a particular thanks to each of our panelists for their contributions today. Special thanks to the staff at the FDA, Rachel Sherman and Melissa Robb in particular, for their work with us on putting this event together. I really need one of those scrolling credits things that Rich put up. That's a really good idea. And I want to give special thanks to the staff at Brookings who put a lot of time and effort into putting this event together, and that includes Greg Daniel, Sally Clucci, Aaron Carnes, Michelle Wong, Michaela Coleman. Michaela, not over time yet, right? Beth Rafferty, Nathan Thompson, Sarah Tetrault, Taylor Carrilla, and Larry Cocott. But most of you, most of all, I want to thank you, because this is a collaborative effort. It will only continue to work with active involvement from everyone who is potentially affected and impacted by what's a very promising set of steps towards supporting patient safety, but is only going to work if we continue this collaboration effectively together. Please stay tuned for further announcements here. You've heard about some potential source of information today, the ongoing webinars and other information that we will continue to support from Brookings. That information is available on our website. Rich talked about the Mini Sentinel website, and as you've heard as well, there will be more announcements coming from FDA. Looking forward to staying involved with all of you in this very important set of issues. Thank you very much, and have a great afternoon. Thank you.